Taxation is theft.
Please, at least leave us alone in our living room.
My job is to find the truth.
Double the taxes.
I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Triple the taxes.
This is an IRS agent's dream.
If you think that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself.
Beautiful, lovely taxes.
Sorry, but I don't do taxes.
Did you see the memo about this?
The government is a greedy piglet.
Just leave us alone.
Do you know what Ralph just said?
The roads.
You boys like Mexico?
And welcome back. Taxation is theft. How are you guys today? I've got Michael Chaney with me. Welcome back to the show. How's it going?
I'm doing well. Thanks for inviting me. How's it going with you?
Awesome. It's going pretty good. We're you know, locked down. it's interesting because I've been watching a lot of your show. And you've been talking a lot about coronavirus and everything else, and you've actually got an interesting new, fact sheet that you put out. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, so I put an ebook out. I mean, like everybody, you know, I've been trying to devour as much information about coronavirus as possible, particularly over in the UK. We're kind of at the forefront of, yet again, the forefront of liberty infringements in terms of government reaction to the outbreak. So a lot of my followers had started sending me stuff, different medical reports, different experts, different opinions. And what I've really tried to do, I've got no agenda for it at all. It's not like I'm trying to make it fit any particular narrative. I really just want to know what the hell is going on, like everybody else. So I collected all this stuff. I actually approached a number of people for interviews directly, doctors, nurses, scientists, was able to get some of that information into the report, and I've just created it, and people can go download it for free. You don't need to enter an email or anything. It's just over at coronatruth.com, and it's just my take using all the different information I could gather, including all the original sources, so you can go and check out all the original material, just on a closer portrayal outside of the mainstream media about what exactly is happening regarding deaths, reporting, government reaction to it, implications of the lockdown, and things that they're doing separate to coronavirus, possibly, under the guise of using coronavirus as a distraction. So, yeah, that's my attempt to, you know, try and set the record straight a little bit.
Yeah, and it is really difficult to get any correct information because, of course, we see, I don't know, I've seen, people uploading videos of empty hospitals. Meanwhile, they're telling us that there's, you know, record-breaking numbers. Somebody else also posted that while the corona death numbers were up, the number of heart attacks and strokes and everything else were actually down here in the U.S., which is interesting.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of things. The hospitals are empty. It's quite an interesting movement that I followed that quite closely. It did seem, even to people that aren't really of a conspiracy theory type nature, it did seem quite alarming that, you know, you could drive past these hospitals. Obviously, there's nobody in the car, nobody in the parking lot. There's nobody in reception. There's a number of reasons for that. I mean, what I did when I've seen these things and what I've tried to do is go to the source. So avoid media. Avoid journalists of any kind, and that includes independent Facebook journalists, and just go to the source. So I've gone to doctors, I've gone to nurses and said, what is the actual deal where you are? You tell me directly. I'm not publishing this. I might use it anonymously, but what's going on where you are? And, you know, that's how I form my opinion that, you know, a combination of reasons for the hospitals being empty. One is they've got rid of a whole bunch of staff that are self-isolating because they've got conditions. So large swathes of the normal procedures that are done in hospital are not currently taking place because they've told people not to go unless they have certain conditions. Staff aren't there to do those kind of procedures. Obviously, visitors aren't allowed in hospitals, particularly in the UK. I don't know about anywhere else, but you're not allowed visitation. You know, a lot of these people that have this or conditions like it are now dying in complete isolation and alone, you know, just looking at somebody with a face mask on it as their sort of parting vision of the earth, which is kind of depressing. But the other thing is, I think we're not at the so-called peak of it, you know? So I think this whole hospitals are empty thing, it seems to really drive a lot of the medical community irate, you know, because they're like, well, you go into an ICU, if you can get into an intensive care unit and show me one that's empty, then, you know, we'll start taking notice. But of course, the receptions are empty. People aren't just walking up and checking in, you know, like you would with a broken finger. You know, they're being right. carried in. Or they're in the ICU, or as I say, a lot of the hospitals are preparing, but they're not taking people in. I mean, there was a hospital in the UK which they built from scratch using a stadium or an arena. I think we mentioned this last time. Takes 1,000 people. It was empty for a few days. You know, the peak hadn't been reached in the UK. I don't think it has yet. But now, literally in the past few hours, they've started taking patients there because it's spilling over from the London hospitals. So combination of factors in terms of the empty hospitals thing. The deaths is probably one of the biggest areas of dubiety and grey area, and really something that I think is being exploited. You know, if you take the case of Italy, for example. A lot of the governments around the world have said, oh, we're going to be the next Italy. Don't want to be the next Italy. Look how bad it is over there. There's a number of factors that the death rate is so high in Italy. Firstly, it is the second oldest population in the world in Italy, second only to Japan. So the average age of people in Italy is 10 years older than pretty much every other country in Europe. So right off the bat, you've got people that they're going to be dying from whatever, you know, separate to COVID-19. So that's the first thing to bear in mind. The second thing to bear in mind is their health system's crap. If you look at the number of ICU beds per capita, if you find a table for that, America is at the top. Italy is like way, way off the bottom. It's just, you know, it's the pits. They just haven't got the number of intensive care beds. So they're having to put people up in emergency rooms. They don't have the facilities, so that's the other thing. But the third thing that's really skewing the Italian figures is they do not, they're reporting in what they describe themselves as the most generous way in terms of COVID-19. So literally, if you die in Italy at the moment and you have been tested to have COVID-19, they are counting that as a COVID-19 death. Okay, so that doesn't mean that they're not saying that it was caused by COVID-19. It's not even saying that it contributed to the conditions or led in some indirect way to the death. Basically, just means there was a death and there was COVID-19. And those things all combined are making the figures in Italy look sky high. And I'm not denying that it's bad. It is bad. I've seen footage. I'm sure everybody's seen footage, you know, of coffins piling up and panicked ICU rooms and, you know, military trying to deal with the dead and so on. It is bad, but it's not something that you can compare it to other countries and say, look, if we don't lock down, if we don't shut this down, then it's going to be like Italy, because it's really not. There's so many different factors at play there.
Right. And I mean, that's always going to be the thing. From hospital to hospital, reporting is going to be different. From country to country, the rules are obviously different, so they're going to be counting this differently. That's always something that has to be, and this isn't just with this, this is with every single statistic. I mean, we've got gun violence statistics, violent crime statistics, theft, murder, all this other stuff. Those statistics are always taken differently, depending on different rules. What qualifies as one death or crime in one country might not qualify the same as in another. So yeah, that's definitely always something. And I think, you know, that's always when it's really difficult, because when you get numbers that are sometimes seemingly intentionally distorted, it's easy to point at them and say, well, you know, those are wrong. And then it almost feels like the argument is, so don't believe it at all, which is like, no, it is inflated to some degree. How much, we don't know. It's, you know, on one hand, you're saying don't trust those numbers at all, but then it's like, okay, so what, do we assume it's a zero instead? Of course not. So it's, you know, it's really interesting. And this is why it's always so important to, you know, make sure we're getting legitimate sources and understanding the data. But of course, when you have to squish everything down into a sound bite, that's not always easy.
Yeah, people are always looking for shortcuts. And I think, you know, particularly in a political sort of atmosphere in the US, especially over the past few years, it's been very useful and habitual for people to want to fall into either one camp or the other. This is not a one camp or the other situation. I think it started out, and many of us, and myself included, thought this was A, either something pretty bad, or B, a complete, you know, hoax, if you like, or, you know, a real power grab by government using it as a cover. I really think it's both at the moment. That's where I stand at the moment. It's definitely real. I mean, my brother has had it. One of my best friends has gone through it. They've both come through the other side. They both told me personally that it was the worst thing they've ever gone through. Obviously, you know, we've all got personal experiences, and particularly in here in the UK, because we're such a small country, it starts to get closer. You know, you see neighbors, you hear friends, you know, it starts out, it's just down in England, then it's in Scotland, then it's in the town that you're in, then it's in the neighborhood, then it's the street, then it's your next door neighbor. So you start to treat it with a bit more respect. But when you dig into the reporting that's been done, especially by the mainstream media and the death reporting that's been done, it really shows you that there's a lot of badging things into the COVID umbrella at the moment. In the UK, for example, they've recategorized COVID-19. So it needs to be a death that's reported on the death certificates. I think it's the first respiratory disease that's ever fallen into that classification. So previously, any kind of respiratory disease death in the UK didn't need to be classified or listed as the cause of death, if you like. But because this has been given this new categorization, it means that anything that kind of falls into that remit is now, as they say, you know, if there's reasonable cause, it needs to be marked as COVID-19. And the experts themselves, the guy from Imperial College London, who's advising the government here in the UK, said himself it could be up to 2/3 of the reported deaths for COVID in the UK could actually be people that were just going to die anyway. And again, we're not saying that this isn't bad. We're not saying people dying isn't bad. And we're not saying that we want people to die. We just want to know the truth of how bad is this, and is the reaction to the government justified with what we're faced with. In the US, the guidelines are slightly different. The CDC basically says that doctors don't have to test for COVID-19 in order to mark a death as a COVID-19 death if they have, I think the wording is, a reasonable suspicion or a reasonable certainty. It says they should test where possible. But again, if you're a doctor in an ICU and you've got people falling over left, right, and center, keeling over, and you've got all this paperwork to do, and you've got people that are struggling to stay alive in the ICU, and the instructions say you should test if possible, you know, I don't blame them for not doing tests. But right, what it means is there's a lot of deaths now that are being badged into this COVID-19 that, again, they don't know, the doctors don't know, even the experts don't know how many of these deaths were caused by COVID-19. And that's the huge issue. You know, all the media sources are saying, oh, there's so many COVID-19 deaths. This person died of COVID-19. They died with COVID-19. I mean, there was a case in the UK, an 18-year-old died, and it was reported all over the media, all the tabloid, all the headlines. You know, youngest victim in the UK to die from coronavirus. It was released a few days after that. The hospital said, well, they had coronavirus. You know, they tested positive for the virus. However, they were actually killed by you know, a number of other conditions that weren't related to coronavirus. So there's a lot of that going on, and there seems to be no effort to really determine and make that differentiation between caused by COVID-19 or has died and has tested positive for COVID-19, and those things are not always linked, and we don't know what that overlap is.
Right, and I'm looking up the statistics I want to try to see, because I mean, there's people don't realize this because it's, you know, we live in our little towns, we live in our little communities, we interact with a dozen people a day, maybe sometimes up to 100. We don't realize how many people there are in the world, and so I'm looking. This is an ongoing counter. So this is, and of course this is I'm sure just estimated based on the normal rate, but 62,000 deaths today, just based, and this is so far. I don't know if this is based on my time zone or yours, but hundreds of thousands of people die every day, every single day around the world. That's a lot of people. And so, you know, just like you're saying, if, you know, if this kid was going to, like, oh, well, because a lot of people would be suspicious. Oh, so you think he was just going to die anyway and that's normal? Yes. Hundreds of thousands of people die around the world every single day for millions of different reasons. Right. And, yeah. And at the same time, it's like by saying that, what we're saying is they're exaggerating the numbers. They're using that to manipulate us. But at the same time, we're not saying, okay, take off your gloves and masks and go to the grocery store and lick everything. We're not saying that at all. So, I, you know, just like you said, it doesn't have to be the extremes. And that's the trap that society always falls into. Pro-life, pro-choice. There's no middle ground. It's always the extreme. Democrat, Republican, tyrant or anarchist. There's nobody wants to see the middle ground.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, in the U.S. every day, on average, 7,700 people die just ordinarily. So, you know, you've got to bear that in mind when we're looking at these figures. In the U.K., it's 1,600 people die on average every day. That's based on, I think, the previous year's 2018 figures, actually, I think. And what we're currently being told is that this is how many people are dying in our countries, respective countries, each day from COVID. But of course, that's not strictly true. These are deaths that have been tested. And sometimes, as I said, sometimes they've not even been tested. It's been assumed that they've got COVID-19. The other thing as well, and I put this in the report, I found a very interesting graphic, which is a European body, and it measures the what they call the excess mortality, which sounds a bit harsh, but it's basically how many deaths are occurring in each week across Europe over and above what would be expected. And you're able to do comparisons and actually run it week by week, going right back to, I think, 2016. So what you can do is you just move the cursor along, and I've got a graphic, as I say, inside that report, and it compares week one of 2018 to week 12, I believe, which was a couple of weeks ago now, of this year, obviously during the COVID crisis. And what you will see on that particular graphic is the number of deaths in 2018 in week one were actually a lot higher. There were more excess deaths in Europe in the first week of 2018 than there were in week 12 of 2020. Now, of course, we can look into why that is and all the causes of that. But most importantly, there was no lockdown in 2018, right? There was no mention of we've got to stay at home, you know, make sure you're doing social distancing, make sure you self-isolate. Why? Why not? Like, what's going on? You know, it's not entirely accurate what we're being told. And I think that the reporting of the deaths is certainly one of the areas. It seems strange that they've moved away from protocols that they've used to have. For example, in the AIDS epidemic, they adopted this protocol of reporting where you would report on the time of the infection was spotted and then the time and date of, you know, the date of the death. So you had these very clear figures currently at any given time, how many people are infected and how many people have died on what date. For some reason, that's completely thrown out of the window right now. So every day we wake up and we look at these figures, we've got no idea when they're from. Some figures, they hold on to them for a week. There's a backlog. There's a lag. There's a delay. Why is it not being reported? I mean, if this is, you know, this is supposedly the most, you know, deadly and most, you know, catastrophic and incredible milestone event in medical history, and they've seemed to have forgotten the basics about how to record and you know, drilling down into the cause of death. It's I mean, at the very worst, it's, you know, it's causing, you know, misinformation. But, you know, it could be worse than that. You know, it could be done with intent.
Right. So Max is asking the question, do we think the reporting error goes both ways? For example, if someone dies alone at home from corona, it might not get counted that way. What do you think about that?
There are figures. Yeah, I mean, they've started now to release figures outside of hospitals. So to begin with, pretty much until last week, all the figures are really just hospital deaths. They have started to release now figures from people dying in the community, dying at home, dying in hospices, and basically people dying outside of a hospital. It did not have a huge dramatic impact, you know, in terms of a huge spike. It didn't make a difference to the overall.
Right, because they're ultimately curve. They're recorded anyway. Whether or not they're recorded as corona would be the issue. But I would imagine, I mean, they're, you know, it's not like, oh, we don't keep track of those at all. Those are still included.
Well, yeah, exactly.
And everything.
Yeah, they're not slipping through the net. And plus, I mean, if people deteriorate so bad, they would probably end up in hospital anyway, unless they, you know, they somehow can't get out. Or as this person was saying, if they're alone. But they have started to now report on that as an addition to the hospital deaths that they're reporting. Right. But yeah, as I say, it's widespread. There's that recategorization in the UK, which means a lot more stuff's falling under COVID than anything else. You've got that classification in Italy, where they're basically saying, you know, anybody that's positive with COVID is listed as a COVID death, regardless of cause of death. And then obviously in the US, you've got guidelines that, well, try and test them if you can, but if not, you know, no big deal, we'll take your word for it kind of thing. So, you know, that it's going on everywhere. I think the bigger question is, you know, that something that we can actually put our finger on and try and analyze with some meaning rather than conjecture is, what are the implications of this lockdown, you know, financially and health-wise, versus the repercussions of, you know, if we weren't locked down, in terms of the virus, what would it do? And there's a number of experts that are saying it's not the right thing to do. Obviously, we need to isolate the vulnerable. We need to protect the elderly and those that are immunocompromised. That's a given. We're not talking about just shifting everybody outside. But if we leave to one side all the financial ramifications and the knock-on effects of suicide and domestic abuse and depression and health issues and people not getting the help, if we park all of that, which is a huge thing just to park, but let's say we park that and focus just on the COVID-19 situation, some experts are now saying that it would be better for us to, for the healthy people and the people that aren't at risk, i.e. children and those of an age that are also healthy, to be going around and getting this, to develop this herd immunity, so that we can squash the curve down, not flatten it and extend it, because this whole flattening of the curve isn't killing the virus. It's not eradicating. It's merely delaying the inevitable. It's trying to shift the demand on the healthcare system over a prolonged period, which is fine. I understand the logic of that. But obviously, it's the implications of everybody else that's cooped up and locked down and out of work and depressed and unemployed and whatever, and right, because of it. So one of the experts that I managed to get some information from in the report, he believes that China was so successful at eradicating the disease, he didn't believe that they were fudging the figures. And he said, well, look, if people wanted to get out that there's still thousands of deaths going on over there, you know, it only takes one cell phone, somebody to shoot something, and, you know, right, he didn't feel right, it was anything untoward was going on with their figures. He basically said they were slowest to react because they had it first. So it was actually quite a number of days, even weeks, I believe, until they locked down in China. Now, when they did lock down, they were very forceful and they were keeping people in one place. But he feels they were almost at that point of herd immunity by the time they'd initiated a lockdown. Enough people had got it that they'd built up this immunity. People that were asymptomatic, so weren't suffering with it, but were carrying it, they'd given it to enough people that when the lockdown was put in place, and as you, I think just today it's been released that Wuhan itself is now opened up again, that they didn't see this second wave because there's a lot of herd immunity had already built up. the rest of the countries that are around the world, and he also said this was the same for South Korea, by the way, they're the only two graphs that are completely different to the rest of the world. The rest of the world's on this upward thing. Mm-hmm. China and South Korea are like this, and everybody's like, what's going on? Or, you know, China's obviously telling a lie that, you know, that they've not given us the full information. This professor, he's one of the leading experts on epidemics, epidemiologists. He's worked in it for decades and decades. He's not paid by the government, so he doesn't have to toe the party line. And he said, no, I think it's because they developed herd immunity. That's what went on in China. But the rest of the world, what's happened is we've reacted too quick. The government has gone in and said, let's lock down. And they've acted quickly, thinking it's the right thing to do, but it's not developed that herd immunity. So what's going to happen is there'll be a second wave. As soon as this is lifted and people are released out again, here we go again. You know, it's going to spark off again because we're lacking that herd immunity.
So what's interesting about that is China's population is what, 3 or 4 times the size of the U.S. And the U.S. has already surpassed China in the total number of deaths. So that would make sense, but at the same time, it's if that were the case, if everybody were infected, we would expect, I would think, a higher number of deaths in China. Of course, there's I've heard people say that it's more deadly in the U.S. the same way it's more deadly in Italy because of their age. In the U.S. because of the quality of food that we have. It doesn't have nutrients. Therefore, we all have weaker immune systems and everything else. I don't know. What do you think about that? How that plays into that?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many variables in this. There's lifestyle, there's diet, there's genetics, there's different strains. I mean, you know, there are experts that believe there's at least 2 strains of this going around, depending which country, and you may get a different strain of it. I know for a fact, looking at the reports from doctors working in different ICUs across the US, that high blood pressure is a big contributing factor towards this being worse. And obviously high blood pressure is, you know, weight, overweight, high fat diet, alcohol, and so on. And that's normally associated with Western countries that are, you know, more well off, able to, you know, eat to excess and so on. So I think that could be a factor. Again, I've tried to really focus on, you know, again, trying to go to the source. I know there's a lot of people that are sort of self-proclaimed experts. Oh, well, China's lying, and that. Well, show me the evidence. You know what I mean? Show me the proof, or show me that's the case. Whereas, you know, this guy, this professor that's an epidemiologist, this is his job and has been for decades. If he's saying that he thinks it's herd immunity, I'll go with him. You know, because he's backed that up with decades of knowledge and research. He doesn't know for sure that's what it is, but I'd rather take his hunch over right. Somebody just saying, oh, well, China's lying. And like we said at the beginning, it could be both. It probably is both. You know, China obviously wanted to seize the victory early on. Look, we're great. We've crushed this thing. Great for propaganda and, you know, telling their population, look, we've done a great job and we've protected you. Look how bad Europe and America's doing. So I'm sure there's an element of that going on as well. But it is important to note that they were far slower to lock down and far slower to react to this because they were first, whereas the other countries went into that lockdown
right.
straight
they didn't
away.
They didn't have a warning, whereas they were.
Well, they didn't. They didn't even know what it was. You know, they had no idea what was going on. Well, again, so as well led to believe they had no idea what was going on.
Right. So let's talk about, because the last time we talked. It was before this all really started getting out of hand, before all the lockdowns and everything else. And of course, we were talking about how abusive the government was, how they're you know, taking our rights, taking our money and everything else. What's changed for you over there in Scotland, right?
Yeah, it's crazy, man. I mean, it's kind of weird, like when you were saying that, it's like, oh yeah, remember the good old days when the government just would take taxes and
all we had to worry about was the tax man.
Yeah.
Now it's the quarantine man.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, I mean, they've adopted this policy as all governments are doing now. So it's the three phase approach, right? Phase 1, they ask you. phase two, they tell you, and phase three, they force you. And we're currently in phase three here in the UK. They have, I'm only allowed outside of the house once a day unless I'm going to get medicine or food. So if I want to exercise outside, I can only do it once a day. If I do it more than once a day, I'll be escorted or can be escorted by the police back to my house. There's been stories, I've seen the stories of police breaking up barbecues in the UK, tipping over, kicking over barbecues to break up gatherings. There were four police vehicles outside a building last week. I saw the picture. It looked like some sort of terrorist or murder attack. It was a group of people were drinking inside a pub, so four police vehicles went and broke that up. Google is now passing the data to government of our movements on a weekly basis. It's been assimilated in an aggregate format, apparently allegedly anonymous, so they can see usage of parks, usage of shops, public transport. So if you've got an Android or any kind of Google app, Gmail, YouTube, any of those kind of things on your phone, you will be being tracked in the UK and the US now. And that information is given to government to see if you're adhering to the policies. I think a couple of weeks ago, the police were sending drones out to an area of countryside where people were walking in the middle of nowhere. We're talking like up a mountain with your dog, one guy with his dog, probably about 5 miles from anybody, and the police are following him with a drone to later publish on the internet. They then get the drone, they go back to his car, follow him back to his car, get his registration and send him a citation saying, this is not essential. What you're doing here is not essential. People moved on from parks. You can't sunbathe. You can't go and sit on the beach on your own. It's insane. It's crazy. It's a crazy time.
So I'm looking through my phone right now. If you go into your settings, and you never know how well this is going to work, but if you go into your settings, you can actually turn off either per app or for the entire device, you can turn off location services.
It won't work for that. No.
Wow.
Because it's an application ID. Every phone's got an application, a unique ID, and obviously every time it pings a cell tower. So you would
right. They still know which tower you're using.
Yeah, you need to leave it at home. It's basically the only way that you can't be tracked. Which, I've been saying for months anyway before all this kicked off. But
that's where we're at. Wow. Yeah. And this whole thing about tracking drones, and now we're seeing that there's a new company that's got a drone that can detect fevers or coughing. And it's, what are they going to do? Send those people? Oh, they're going to get arrested and they're going to get thrown into like a quarantine jail, which is probably going to have, crappy healthcare services. And what's interesting about that is if you get sick at home, it's one thing. Yeah, you're probably not going to have a ventilator, but if you have a mild case, you might still have family that's going to take care of you, make you tea, keep you fed, all this other stuff. If they put you in a prison, and especially if people are, employees of hospitals, I'm sure employees of prisons, that are high risk are also, staying home. You could very well end up in a scenario where, you're stuck there, you're not being taken care of, and a mild case is now that much worse because you're maybe not even being fed. People don't generally make a big deal out of this, but your mental state has a lot to do with your ability to beat a virus. It has a direct impact on your immune system. When you get depressed, your immune system gets weaker. That's a huge deal that I don't think people are taking into account, but yeah. So it's, this is interesting that, how are, if you leave your house twice a day, are you, are your neighbors snitching? Are, or is it up to the cops to recognize you as like, hey, didn't I see you earlier today? How many people are actually is this just an unenforceable threat? Obviously the drone thing is completely enforceable, but which makes no sense because you're out in the middle of nowhere anyway. You're more than 6 feet away from anybody else. But you know, if you just go out, like, are people snitching, or are they like, man, screw this government, screw this lockdown, we don't believe in this?
Yeah, people are snitching. I mean, I've seen stuff in the US. Police departments have set up special hotlines, for example, that you can phone in and report businesses that are still open that aren't essential. So there's a lot of that going on. I think it's happening here more with businesses than it is with individuals. But there is this sense, it's this theory of the panopticon. And if you've heard this, it's a type of building that was developed hundreds of years ago. And the idea is it's a way to keep an eye on a lot of prisoners. You have it's like a circular building where the prison cells are facing the inside of the circle, and the tower is in the middle with one guard in the tower. But the prisoners cannot see the guard. The guard can see all of the cells at any one time. That's called a panopticon. And that's really what's at play now, and that's what they want to be at play, is the idea that you know that you're probably not being watched, but you also know that you could be being watched. Right. So it's affecting behaviors. For example, my wife went out. She came out with me in the morning. She wanted to go out again with the dogs. It was a nice day in the afternoon. She left her phone. She'd never done that. You know, she always thought I was being this paranoid tinfoil hat guy. And she was like, yeah, I'm not going to take my phone just in case, because it would be tracked. The data would be there. And yeah, whilst they're saying it's anonymized and it's all aggregated, who knows? Well, you know, we know they could do it. We know they could quite easily say, okay, who's gone to green areas twice in a period? They could definitely do that. They are stopping people in parks and so on, making sure that, you know, they're actually exercising, that what they're doing is essential. They have roadblocks now and they will stop cars. You need to prove that you're on an essential journey, either for medicine or care work or a food trip, you know, by showing a receipt or whatever. So they're trying to enforce it as best they can. I mean, there was a lady who was arrested at a station. The police approached her and said, where are you going and what's your name? And she refused to answer. And they have they tried to fine her about $700 for refusing to answer. But give the citation under the wrong paragraph of this new coronavirus bill that's been passed in the UK. So actually got thrown out of court. So she kind of won in the end, but she didn't speak throughout the whole procedure, either during when the police approached her or during the court case. She just remained silent, which is obviously her right to do that. So they are trying to enforce it. Moving people on from parks. If people are sitting down, having a picnic at the park, even if you're on your own with nobody around, or if it's just you and your family, it's not allowed. You can't do that. And it's happening. You know, the police are trying to clamp down and you know, any ways that they can. And I've seen it in the US, you know, paddleboarder arrested, going paddleboarding in the sea, you know, miles away from anybody. He was arrested and handcuffed, and, you know, people playing in parks and just crazy.
So you said that this woman got a citation and it was thrown out of court. Are the courts are still open?
Yeah. The courts are still open. That they went through a period of debating whether or not to close them or to scale them back. But yeah, the courts are still open.
They need the revenue, right? So they're like, yeah, let's leave that one open.
Well, yeah. I mean, they've passed this whole new, it's literally called the coronavirus bill. Number of things in it in the UK. One of them, for example, is a doctor can now sort of consign you to a mental hospital. It takes just one doctor to do that now. It used to be two doctors. You know, you always get a second opinion. Mm-hmm. And obviously, in terms of being sectioned in a mental hospital, which means you could be there for 3 or 6 months, basically in prison, it would be nice to have a second opinion on that. You don't have that now. That's been passed through as part of the coronavirus bill. So it's all these kind of things that have been snuck under the radar, separate to really the coronavirus situation. The biggest one that I've seen in the US is this Earn It Act, which they're saying is to clamp down on child abuse, but really it's a way for them to end the end-to-end encryption and get the likes of Facebook and Twitter to give them a back door to everybody's private messages. They're trying to put that through right now. Like, it was tabled a couple of weeks ago. why are they even doing that? If they're so busy and so worried about the coronavirus, why is this even an issue right now? It's kind of worrying and concerning, to say the least, that they're forcing this. And obviously the way that it works is they say currently it's the big tech companies are protected. If anybody puts child abuse material on their network, it's the individual who's responsible. What the government is now saying in the US to blackmail the companies is, if you don't agree to this act, or if you don't follow suit with this, it will actually be the big tech companies who are responsible. So, you know, Facebook, for example, whatever it is, 1 billion people using it or more. Anybody that posts child abuse through that mechanism, through Facebook Messenger, for example, Facebook would be held responsible. So how they counteract that is the government says, well, you need to give us access to the instant messages of the following individuals that they deem they want to search, that Facebook has obviously promised anonymity to and privacy to under the end-to-end encryption. Currently, the big tech companies are searching for this kind of material themselves and handing over these individuals, quite rightly, to the government. If this bill gets passed, the big tech companies are actually acting as agents of the government, which means that a warrant would need to be issued, and it would actually be a contravention of the Fourth Amendment of unfair searches. So it would actually result in less paedophiles being prosecuted if this act goes through. So it's a whole facade that it's about protecting children and, you know, it's anti-child abuse. It's not. That's the mask for it. What they're trying to do is get access to everybody's encrypted personal messages through Facebook and Twitter and all the rest. And the idea behind it, as I say, if companies revoke against this, they will then be held responsible for any illegal material used on their network rather than the individual. So that's one of the biggest things that's currently been trying to get through as a law in the US whilst everybody's looking at coronavirus. Basically, the last bastion of online privacy is about to be eroded whilst we're all focused on wearing masks and saving toilet roll.
Right. And what's interesting about that is, you know, it's definitely going to change a lot of things. A lot of, normies are going to be, their data is going to be looked at. But it really doesn't. So it affects a majority of people, but people who still want to keep their information absolutely private. I mean, like right now, there's PGP or GPG for email, and it's end-to-end encryption, but it doesn't use, like, it has nothing to do with the mail servers because the mail servers is basically an open protocol. So you can create and send your encrypted information. It's still truly end to end, and there's no way. What Facebook would, you know, end up doing is they have end to end encryption, but essentially what they'd be able to do is say, okay, we're going to give you a key that we also have, so we can still sniff through your messages. But I want to say I've already seen. I think this happened a couple years ago when there was a threat of. I think it was just like the NSA stuff was starting to come to light, Somebody made a plugin for Facebook that would actually use a separate key to encrypt a message to send through your messenger, and the person receiving the message would also have to have this like browser plugin installed, which meant that the data was being encrypted outside of Facebook's kind of ecosystem. So it's like this stuff is still possible to circumvent. And people who really want to keep their information private still will. Vast majority of people are going to be giving up their information. Of course, that also brings up the question, well, what if the NSA is getting access to quantum computing and they're able to like crack all these algorithms now? So even if you have your own encryption system, you know, are they still going to, are they, you know, is this just giving them a way to be able to read what they already couldn't? You know, that's an interesting question too, but you know, how are we ever going to find that out?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but I think that's the other thing as well about that move. If it goes ahead, is obviously it drives the offenders, it drives them to the dark web. You know, it drives them to other places where they just cannot be found. you know, at least if they're on Facebook, as disgusting and obviously abhorrent as it is, they're findable, you know. Zuckerberg and all these cronies can track them down and, you know, get their information, get their IP address or whatever, and find them and hand them over and fine. But if this goes through and these kind of characters know that they could be subject to warrant, subject to government surveillance, they're not going to hang around. They're going to be off and gone, you know, into areas of the internet that, you know, the government can't yet reach, if, as you say, if indeed there are any of those.
Right. Yeah, it's always, I mean, it's a cat and mouse game, which is, you know, yeah, it's the government's always going to take, you know, it's like I say, don't let a good tragedy go to waste. You know, they're always trying to expand. Since the beginning of the Constitution, they've always been, you know, trying to figure out how to violate our rights and get around the law that says that they can't. And you know, sometimes it's for good reasons. So you know, let's say there's a murder case, and we're pretty sure it's this guy, but we can't prove it, and we can't get a warrant to prove it because we don't have enough to get a warrant. We should be able to get around this law. And a lot of people would look at that and say, yeah, that law is really getting in the way of justice. And it's like, yeah, but that's not really what it's about. What it's about is, if you do get rid of that law, that means a lot of innocent people are going to have their rights violated. They're going to be, you know, if the police had the authority, they would be going door to door and kicking in houses and, hey, we're just going to search to see if you have any drugs in here, because we haven't found any lately. And people are getting really good at hiding it. So we're just going to go door to door and search everybody's stuff with our drug dogs. Like, that's what it could turn into. And what's interesting about drug dogs is I'm totally going on a tangent here, but so when they stop you in your car, and in the US, anyway, the way the law works is, if they have a dog, they're not supposed to make you wait there for a dog to come, but if they can get a dog there fast enough while they're giving you a ticket, the dog can go around the car and sniff, and if it smells drugs, that's not considered an illegal search, because the smell of the drugs is now on the outside of your car, and so therefore it's not, you know, they're not searching inside of your car. And so if you think about it, they could go door to door with a dog, and they could sniff the outside of your house, and if they smell it, like, oh, like that's all very possible too. And it's like, wait a minute, if people are using drugs in the privacy of their own home, like, you may or may not agree with that, but that, you know, what is that, how does that bother you? And do you want, like, are these random police dogs walking up and down your street all the time, when we've seen how they get? I mean, I've seen, you know, police dogs, you know, they bite someone's leg to apprehend them, and then the police are sitting there trying to get the dog off, and because of the dog's training, they're like, they're not letting go, even with the police officer's commands. So it's, you know, it creates an extremely dangerous scenario. And then plus you have, okay, now it becomes normal that you've got police with dogs walking up and down your street, going to every single house. How do you know that they're looking for drugs now? How do you know they're not just, like, you know, looking for people that, you know, whatever, breaking even smaller laws, or man, we're really low on our quota. Okay, let's just bring someone in, anybody. I don't care if they've done anything wrong or not. We have to, this program has to pay for itself, so we need to make a certain number of arrests. When you're just looking at them walking up and down, and they arrest somebody, and you're not even going to think to ask questions. You're just going to say, oh, well, they must have done something terrible. It's like all of these things, is just like you were saying about the panopticon. It becomes this system where just everybody accepts it, but they're also afraid of it. And then they're afraid to even speak out against it, because if you speak out against it, oh, you must be doing something wrong, and therefore you're a criminal, and you should be investigated, you should be under the microscope. It's a slippery slope, and we're well on our way down it.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I mean, I think that's where we're at in a lot of cases now with this lockdown and situation, is people have just rolled over, you know, and anybody that you know, they're just taking it at face value and just think, oh yeah, there's, you know, they've obviously got our best interest at heart. It's definitely exactly as they've said, you know, it's definitely as dangerous as they've said. And this is definitely the right way to do it. But it's not. We don't know that. Even the scientists don't know that. You know, the leading report that was being used by the UK government to drive all their policy on this wasn't even peer reviewed. You know, even a kindergarten kid knows if you're going to put a science paper out into the scientific community, even if you want to get it published in some crappy magazine or if you want anybody to take it seriously, it's got to be peer reviewed. It has to be reviewed by other scientists at a similar level. This wasn't. You know, that Imperial College London report with all the, you know, the projections of 500,000 dying in the UK if action wasn't taken, it wasn't peer reviewed. And a day after the lockdown in the UK, it adjusted his estimate from 500,000 all the way down to he thought it'd be 20,000 deaths.
Wow.
And he reckoned that this was, oh, it's as a result of the lockdown. It was one day after the lockdown. There's no way it would have even had any impact by then. So there's definitely things going on. I think, as you said before, I don't think it's definitely real. You know, there is something real there. If you look at, again, if you go back to the doctors and the nurses and you look at some of the posts that they're making inside their own community, not to get publicity, not on the media, but to each other, they are worried. They are overworked when their ICUs are, you know, in an area that's got a lot of cases. They're seeing a lot of people dying more than usual, and they don't know how to fight it. They're trying different things and sharing ideas amongst one another. So it is definitely real, but there's so much gray area with this that you have to question it. You cannot let fear beat curiosity. You need to remain curious and need to keep questioning what's going on so that we can come out of this intact as individuals and not just this amorphous blob of, you know, compliant goo that just does whatever the government tells us, you know. Because I mean, the other end game for this, and this is something that I've seen, saw it happen in China, and it's now been floated to potentially happen in the UK, is they've got an app in China. I don't know if you saw this. You could only go to certain areas, you could only use certain public transport if you had this app installed and it was marked green. So you would basically meant you were safe from COVID. If you were marked red, you couldn't travel. And if you didn't have the app, you couldn't travel. There was footage of them turning people. They would check you at the gate to get into the subway station. And all the green people go through, red people turn back. And if you didn't have a phone or whatever, like a lot of the old population, they couldn't travel either. But they were using this as like a passport, like a COVID passport to let people in certain areas. Obviously, they could track people because it had QR codes in each of the stations in the subway that you would scan into your phone to tell them where you've been so they can monitor exactly right. Where you've been. And the government in the UK and in other countries in Europe is currently working on this exact solution, an app on the phone. If you've been tested, you would then upload this into the app. It would then backdate all the data because it knows where you've been looking at your cell phone, and it would contact all the people that you'd been close to in that time frame because it knows exactly which shop you've been to, which store, which station. It would contact all those people through their app and say, look, you could have been compromised by COVID because this person had COVID that you bumped into, you know, at Walmart Tuesday last week at 11:12 p.m. You know, there was a person there with COVID-19. You know, you need to self-isolate for 2 weeks. You know, they're talking about wristbands that might have it. So it does make you wonder, is this what they're aiming towards? You know, we're all under lockdown. We're all chomping at the bit to get out. We want life to return to normal. There isn't a normal anymore. There isn't going to be a normal. Normal is gone. We're now on new normal. And when we get out, it'll be normal 2.0. You know, it might be that we have to track everything. We can't get into certain, you know, public places or restaurants or cinemas without this app or without this wristband, without a COVID passport. It's not science fiction anymore. You know, they're actually working on all this stuff right now. So, it's terrifying, but we've got to remain open-minded and we've got to try and remain positive and control what we can, which is, you know, working on ourselves in this time, trying to learn as much as we can. And trying to dig a little bit deeper beyond the headlines that we see, beyond the sound bites, as you say,
right,
to what is actually happening here.
And so, I mean, as you're telling me this, like two things come to mind is, you know, one is the social credit system that China's already got that, which interestingly enough, if they don't like you for whatever reason, you could, you know, I'm not sure what counts as a negative point against you, but they can prevent you from having the money. It's not like they call it social credit, but it's not like money. It's not about money. But if you have the money, you can't buy a plane ticket because you're, you know, you're not an acceptable person. You're a threat to society, whatever, you know, for whatever reason. Which interestingly kind of sounds like this. Now, I will say, if I had an app that would tell me where all the people with corona was, like, I would think that that's actually kind of interesting because I could assess my own risk. But at the same time, at what cost does that information come? And I think that's like, you know, there might be a benefit to it, and it might be a really interesting or good benefit. But at what cost? I mean, because, you know, you can always look at like, oh, you know, I've got noisy neighbors. I don't like that. Well, you could go kill your neighbors and you'll have a quieter neighborhood. And there's a benefit there, but what was the cost? And was that moral? Was it ethical? And it's the same thing with this tracking device. Yeah, it would be great to know, oh, I was at a Walmart with somebody else who had COVID-19. That doesn't even mean you were on the same aisle. Like, it doesn't mean they were standing behind you in line, because we're probably not talking about that kind of granularity. But at the cost of, oh, well, now that you know you were at the same Walmart, now you have to self-isolate. And if you don't, the police are going to come. You're going to have to, it doesn't matter if you go to the hospital and get tested. You're going to have to cancel all your plans for the next 2 weeks. You're not going to be able to go to work. You're not going to have any money. You're not going to be able to feed your family. All these things come into play on some assumptions. And so there's absolutely a high cost to that. The other thing that came to mind was Bill Gates. Did you see his interview with, I think it was like one of the TED Talk guys, where he basically said something like, we need to test everybody to see if they have the virus or the antibodies. And we need, he said, a digital certificate. And I'm like, okay, digital certificates, it's a lot of binary information that's going to come in one form that's either going to be stuck on your passport or implanted in a chip, which we know a lot of people have been pushing for a while. And he talked about needing this he didn't get into the specifics, but he said, like, because we don't want people from over here going to over there unless we know they have the answer. Basically what he's saying is, okay, so you want closed borders unless you have this chip. So anyone who wants to travel internationally is going to have to either get their passport updated with some chip in it, or they're because, I mean, you can hand your passport to somebody else who looks like you, and that could be a problem. So, of course, the implanted chip would be the best way to implement that. We already know that that's where a lot of things are heading. So now if you want to travel internationally, you need this chip. And what happens, because we don't look at it this way in the US, I don't know about in the UK, but not a whole lot of people ever consider that, hey, I might need to flee the country because things might get really ugly. People in Venezuela have gone through that. People in so many other countries have gone through that. We see refugees leaving because their government has gotten so bad. What happens if that happens in our own country and they've implemented the system of these chips? And they say, okay, you've got money, you've got everything else that you need, but you're not allowed to travel. Now, of course, the flip side to that is, well, yeah, but even if you're a refugee, you shouldn't be able to enter a country if you're carrying a disease that, you know, blah, blah, blah. Okay, fine. But that doesn't mean that you have it. That doesn't mean that you're going to be carrying it. All it means is you don't have the chip implanted. And you know, just like the Facebook thing, right? Now we're using Facebook for messages. That's all we're using it for now, and they're encrypted. But we need a little bit more power than that, so let's be able to decrypt them. And it's always going to be, well, we already have the chip in your hand. It already stores it, a digital certificate's only 4 kilobytes, and that thing stores a megabyte. What else can we put in there? Yeah. You know, and where does it end?
Well, that's it. I mean, they're already moving towards that. I mean, the announcement, was it not suggested or hinted at that they might launch a digital currency in the US? It seems like there's a lot of movement from governments around the world to digitize us as individuals, so that we've each got a record on a file somewhere. It can't be easily got at. It can't be destroyed, but it could have potentially control every aspect of our lives, what we do, where we go, the money that we have. You know, if physical currency is got rid of, and you know, they do devalue the dollar and so on, and we're left with this digital currency only that is controlled by a government, they could basically just go into your account, linked to the face, because they obviously got facial recognition now is becoming more and more widespread. In China, they were using it to control ethnic minorities. They would scan people into towns to see if there was an increase in certain percentages of ethnic minorities. And if there were, they would round them up and send them off to camps. That was all done with facial recognition. Wow. So that's probably the way forward. You know, you wouldn't even need a passport or a chip or anything. It would basically be linked to your face, and you can't do anything about your face, you know? So, you know, they would scan your face and it would say, right, this guy is COVID-19, or he's negative, or he's positive, he's got antibodies or not. This is his digital currency. You know, this is his social credit score. He can or cannot enter this specific location, or he can or cannot travel. That's what they want. You know, it's the ultimate control, the ultimate surveillance. They could see absolutely everything and everywhere that you go.
Where does freedom fit into all this?
Well, it's gone, isn't it? It's wiped out.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, if you imagine, even if they had no implication or no involvement in the production, the exacerbation, or the fear-mongering of this virus, you've got to think that they would be sitting now rubbing their hands with glee, because this is like the perfect opportunity for them to basically get away with absolutely anything, you know, because they've whipped up this fear. People are scared to leave their house. They're scared to, you know, get close to other individuals, are scared to think almost. And it's at these times when, you know, governments, you know, commit their worst crimes, when we're on the back foot like this, because we feel that, you know, many people feel that, well, what can we do? We're powerless, and they're, you know, they're going to say the right thing, and we've got no choice in the matter. You know, it's almost feels in a certain sense that it's too late. You know, the trajectory on this has already started.
Absolutely. All right. Just one more time, I want to give you an opportunity to plug your show and this PDF that you've got for download.
Okay, so yeah, if you want to get the full details on the coronavirus that I've collated over the past few weeks, covering some of what we've discussed today and more, get over to coronatruth.com. That's coronatruth.com. And you'll also see a link there to my show
down.
well. So yeah, thanks for having us, Dan. It's been a pleasure as always, and certainly much different circumstances to when we last spoke.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll have to do a part three when we come out the other end. Hopefully it's not 2059 or something.
Right. Yeah, hopefully that's just in a couple of weeks. All right, it's been great talking to you again. I'll see you soon. I'm definitely going to keep up to date on everything you're doing, and I suggest anyone else follow the show as well. He's got some really interesting updates. You basically do a daily live stream on your Facebook page, right? Seems like
I have been doing, yeah, during the sort of lockdown period, I've been doing a daily live stream on
my
Facebook.
We've got nothing better to do.
Well, exactly. Just trying to connect with people, you know, and it's missing human contact. And yeah, I do the podcast every day, Monday through Friday.
Awesome. All right. Well, it's been great having you on. Take care. Taxation is theft, and we'll see you next time.
All right, speak soon. Taxation's left.
Taxation is theft.
Please, at least leave us alone in our living room.
My job is to find the truth.
Double the taxes.
I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Triple the taxes.
This is an IRS agent's dream.
If you think that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself.
Beautiful, lovely taxes.
Sorry, but I don't do taxes.
Did you see the memo about this?
The government is a greedy piglet.
Just leave us alone.
Do you know what Ralph just said?
Roads.
You boys like Mexico!